Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We are so pumped to bring on the Lostlings, the duo that is crushing it with Kawaii and this cutesy art form of toys that is just out of this world. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can follow us on socials at Toys on Tap. You can like, subscribe, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. And you can jump on YouTube and see all the different toy content that we have. And it's incredible. We love it. We produce it. We want you to have it. If you want to support the show even more, you can go to patreon.com/toysontap. This is where you're going to find the nitty gritty. You're going to find the videos of the interviews. You're going to find more content. For $3 a month, you get access to some of this. Thank you again to all the supporters that are already on there. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
We're excited to talk to you. Please apologize, Tim's lower than normal voice. He is still recovering from COVID.
I am very sick right now.
That's okay. I just got back yesterday from a camp working with little kids, so I feel like I've had COVID for a week.
Oh no.
But I'm pumped. So I don't know if you've ever heard of Toys on Tap other than reaching out, but it's a podcast that kind of goes over toy makers in all spaces of the toy community. So I'm pumped that we get to add something, because you're the first artist of this type to be added on, and a duo. So I'm really pumped about that, to be widening us up.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So before we start anything, do you want to introduce yourselves and tell us what you do and who you are?
Okay. Well, I'm Lori, half of the Lostlings. This is Tim. And we make nice but adorable creatures.
We are inspired by pop culture, our friends, you know, anything that we're kind of vibing off of, we make toys of. So
yeah.
Heck yeah. I spend so much time scrolling through different Instagrams when the artist comes on, and you like the amount of different animals that you guys have done and the amount of different, it's insane. There's so many going on.
Yeah. I guess we are more prolific than most in that way, because we do make two new characters every month on top of characters that we may make for like shows or particular events. We're constantly creating new things and also doing iterations of the past characters that we've made.
Yeah. Two a month is absolute. Is that something that you just from the beginning decided this is how we're going to do this?
Kind of.
We didn't really set out that way, but we kind of realized we had to pace ourselves.
Well, yeah, we were doing more.
Yeah.
It took a while for us to kind of find our bearings and figure out the balance of what we enjoy in the toy making with what works and what sells. Mm. If you make more than two a month, people are like, whoa, it's way too many characters. I don't know which one to get. But I guess both Tim and my joy in the toy making is the creation of the characters, the concepting and modeling.
Think of ideas and just kind of run with it. Like, that's the fun part, right? So
yeah. And Tim's kind of an unusual one for an artist, because he enjoys the modeling portion. A lot of the artists we've talked to, they're like, oh yeah, I'd rather not, it takes too long, or I'll just have someone else do it. Tim's like, that's my favorite part. So if I could just model,
put on some music and model all day, like that's like the perfect day.
Spoken like a true artist. So before we do anything, we have to walk it all the way back. Mm-hmm. The fact that you work in toys means that toys were influential for you both as kids, and cartoons might have come into that as well. Walking back to childhood, what are the toys you're playing with, collecting, smashing together, all that stuff?
Oh, mine's more boring, so I guess I'll start and then you can tell your...
I think yours is boring.
Yeah. Well, I was classic toys. I love the Beanie Babies. I love the Barbies. I love anything that I could I could take like two of that toy and interact and make a story. I love building stories behind each of our characters.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was most influential for me, like looking at a character and being like, oh yeah, I can see their background. I can see how they would interact with others, and just building from there.
What was that game that you played?
What game?
That you like collect creatures.
I collect creatures. Pokemon. That's the most obvious one. I'm obsessed with Pokemon. So.
Oh, there was another one that you like you lost the password to get into or whatever.
Oh, Neopets.
Yeah, Neopets.
Neopets. I remember that growing up. Oh my
gosh. Yeah. That was another one. Those little characters just got me. And I loved Neopets so much that this is back in the day before internet was a common thing in homes. And so we had the one home PC and I had limited internet access because my parents would be on it during the day for work and whatever.
Yeah.
So I would sneak down to the computer at like 2 a.m. I would bring my comforter with me so that I could throw it over the PC when I'm logging onto the internet, when it's doing all the screechy noises, so it wouldn't wake up anyone. And then I would get on Neopets and like play for a couple hours, then sneak back upstairs and pretend I was sleeping the whole night.
it's That's kind awesome. Of
ridiculous. But yeah, anything with like characters and creatures. I think
we're influenced a lot by like Pokemon, Neopets, like Magic the Gathering, even like all that collectible goodness of our childhood.
Collecting creatures.
What does that put your ages at? At somewhere in the 90s?
80s.
Okay.
Yeah. We're both 35. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm 33. So we're around the same. I remember Beanie Babies being everywhere.
Yes.
Like my mom was
crazy when I was a kid.
Yeah. My mom was the crazy person that like above her head was like all the boxes that had them all.
That was totally my mom.
Yeah.
She wouldn't let us play with the like special.
I was so jealous when I came over to your house and saw like the wall of
Beanie Babies.
Like super rare Beanie Babies. Yep,
in the cases. Yeah.
Super rare is such a funny term to say about a Beanie Baby.
Right.
Yeah.
I think this one right here, because I made a video about it. I still have one around.
I still have a couple.
It's crazy. I mean, the 90s are such a weird time. It's like that collector mentality when then we're trying to move digital and have Neopets and stuff. And
yeah,
it's insane. So how does that move through? At what point do we... I know that you're both still working with toys, so that means the love of toys and the love of collectibles continued. But at what point did it kind of dip a little bit, like most teenagers do? They just get rid of everything.
Yeah, I had the dip. I don't know that Tim ever did.
Lucky.
I did get rid. Like, so I used to like build Gundams and stuff as a kid. Like, I did have a thing where like I got rid of all my Gundams when I moved to college because like I don't have space for this. What am I going to do with this? But I never really lost that love of like building things, like making stuff.
Yeah. So for me, it was more childhood. I love playing with all this stuff. And then it kind of became like less cool as we entered high school and we were trying to figure out what we wanted to do in college and like what career path we wanted to go on. And I had a really strong interest in art through like middle school, but then by high school, I was like, I can't make a career of art. I'm not that talented. And so I went heavily sciences and I just kind of like dropped all the toys. They still stayed around my parents' house, but I just didn't play with them anymore. They didn't come with me to college. I have younger siblings, so a lot of them just got willed down to them. And so, yeah, toys definitely fell out of my life for quite a bit until, like, I don't know, the last 10 or so years. But, yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about, like, your toy kind of customization with your dad,
too. Yeah, I mean, my family is always into collecting toys. my dad, growing up, collected G.I. Joes. Barbies, like Jean dolls, stuff like that.
Yeah.
My mom collected American Girl dolls. So we would go to like the American Girl doll conventions like as a family, and it was always like an accepted thing within the family. Like there was never any judgment or anything. Like yeah, and my dad and I would like customize Barbies and stuff. Like we'd take out their hair and like remake hair with like silicone and stuff. Like yeah,
That's
like it,
amazing.
it yeah, it was more of like a bonding thing than like
Yeah.
like a
Sorry.
weird, like I don't know, like
That's so, like, I always attribute American Girl dolls as diehard collectors because they're like expensive. They all have a backstory. There's clothes. And so it's like, if you did that, or if that was in your family is a collector.
Right, yeah, like the collector mentality was always in my family, and I think we all just chose like our own particular favorite thing to collect. Like,
Did you ever, I mean, you got rid of all the Gundams and stuff going to college. With that, did you pursue art or some kind of art in there and then come back to Gundams because that love is still there?
I was always into art. I didn't think that I would necessarily do physical like media art. Like that never really crossed my mind as like a career path for some reason. I went into like graphic design and web design mostly because everyone's like, oh, the web's gonna be huge. Like this is what you have to get into. So I went the web design route. I got a degree in it, and then I graduated realizing like I don't really like this. Like, do I want to be doing this forever? And so like when we moved to Pennsylvania, I'm like, well, what am I gonna do? So I ended up actually just getting a job at Target. Like,
Yeah, so this is where our career paths kind of intertwined. Because we were dating in high school, we went to college, and kind of like kept the relationship. But I was very much science, science, science. I'm gonna do science in some way. I decided on medical sciences, and after college, got accepted to medical school. And
Awesome.
so I moved us both to Pennsylvania after college, which had limited opportunities for Tim as an artist. So yeah, he ended up at Target. But about 2 years into med school, I realized I did not want to be a doctor. But poor choice.
I think that's an important life lesson, though. Like, if you don't feel happy doing something, don't do
Don't do
it.
it, yeah. But the timeline just worked out perfectly that at the time I decided I didn't want to be a doctor, Tim discovered something at Target that
Yeah, so I
interested
was
him.
stocking overnight for at Target, and it was the holiday, like Christmas, like tchotchkes, like super cheap toys in like the back aisle. And there was these Funko dolls, Funko Pop, and I was like, wow, that is a really cute take on like Santa and Rudolph. And I immediately, like after that shift, bought them all. And I was like, these are just really cute. I want to play with that idea. 'Cause like I love drawing cute things. Like I'd never seen a figure that's cutesy like that, other than like, snow babies or like stuff like that. Like if nothing that was like things that I thought were endearing, and then they made them even cuter. And so I immediately I was like, I'm gonna make those. Like so I went home, like I had taken classes in packaging design. Like I knew how to do like illustrations for like the boxes and stuff. So I made my own boxes. I concepted my own characters. I had already been customizing Barbies with my dad. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna take these existing figures, gonna augment them and make them my own characters. And so like from there, I was just like, this is just fun. Like I love this. And it was perfect timing because Funko was looking to expand and they needed a packaging, like another hands in packaging design. So
So as Tim had been creating these package designs for new characters and actually making the characters, he had been posting them online. I think it was like Tumblr or
yeah, it was
something.
Tumblr.
Yeah. And he had gotten quite a following because it was when Funko was first really popping off.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
was
like the
yeah.
first year of Funko Pop, or like the pop figures being a
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah. And so Funko actually noticed him, and Brian reached out to him and said, hey, we're looking to hire a new artist. Like, are you interested?
Like, you're already making like characters on the box. That's what we need. Like,
heck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they flew him out to Seattle for an interview.
Which is funny because I missed my flight.
He was just flying.
Like, oh, this sucks. I just blew my chance.
Yeah. So they got him a new flight and flew him out. And then same day, flew him back. And by the time he had landed, they'd called him and given him an offer, said, hey, we'll pay for you to move out here. And I was already like, I don't want to be a doctor. Let's go.
Yeah.
And
awesome.
So we packed up our car and drove across the country. And yeah, that's where he officially started in the toy world as a career.
That's amazing. You know, there was a video that you had posted not long ago, and there was like a wall of Funko in the background. So it was going to come up. So I'm glad that this is how it came up.
Yeah.
I used to work at Target a long time ago as well, doing overnight stuff, which is, do we just all end up in toys? Is
maybe.
That like, we work overnight and we just, but that's awesome that you did that. Do you still have all the original ones that you created and like the new concepts and stuff?
I do, yeah.
Mm. Well, most of them.
Well, yeah, most. I kept the ones that are like really near and dear to me. Like,
awesome.
It took multiple years of like begging and pleading and like concepting to get Pokemon to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have like all the Pokemon ones. And
yeah, Pokemon was one. The Funko Pokemon was 100% Tim. He came in wanting to do that. He had already made the concepts.
Yeah, and in my free time, I'm like, this has to happen. Like,
yeah. He came in with the concepts and it was just like poking and poking and poking until they finally reached out to Pokemon and Pokemon finally agreed. And then Tim was the guy that did all of the original release of
the first
Funko
three releases
Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Yeah. And we just found out recently that since he's left, they're still making more Pokemon pop figures, but they're going back to his original concept art.
Okay. That's cool.
That's flattering. So
I guess they were good.
You moved to Seattle and you're working at Funko and doing art, which immediately has to like shift the paradigm in your head, right? Like thinking there's no money in this to all of a sudden now we're making a living, now we're going
it. Bizarre. Like making toys was never like an idea, like to make money off it, you know?
Right.
Like I don't know, it just never crossed my mind that could possibly be a career path.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how does this shift for you? We get up, we move, we leave med school, and you're witnessing this like rebirth of him into Funko. When do you start getting back into art?
Yeah, so I'm seeing him like finally loving something that he's doing. It's like, it was really exciting for me. And I still am actually in the sciences. I manage a cancer research lab, so very much in the sciences.
Yeah.
But I realized that I could do both. Like I had a good handle on my science career and I had this time left over and I could pursue creative outlets as well. And so, yeah, I started kind of shadowing what he was doing and kind of whispering in his ear, like, hey, you don't have to be doing this for Funko your whole life. Like, you're really creative on your own.
And I feel like throughout like our whole time together, like when I work on something, you're always kind of like looking over my shoulder, like maybe something like this will work better. And like, it always ends up being a better, like complete idea when you get multiple opinions on
I was gonna say we see things from very different perspectives and so balancing that and like
bouncing off each other I think really helps.
I think that's definitely one of our strong suits between both of us. We work well together and we see things from very different perspectives, so together we can make something that's better in the end than either one of us could have done individually.
That's incredible to see how this is playing out. So when you are at Funko, how long do you stay there before you realize I want to do my own art. I want to pursue something else.
Yeah, I was there for 8 years. We moved from a very small, like, warehouse behind a, like, a boat, like, anchor station. Like,
yeah. So
it's like a weird back alley with no signage.
The original Funko headquarters was very sketchy.
Oh man, I got out of the like the cab from the airport. And I was like,
am I in the right place?
Is this it? Like, I literally thought it was just like an alley that they were gonna drop me off in. There was no sign at all.
Yeah. But no, Tim was one of the original five artists for Funko. So they were very small when he joined.
Yeah, I think the entire company was like 17 people.
Yeah. Yeah. Including like it's warehouse. And so, sorry, I'm just kind of taking over your story.
You sound better right now anyways.
Yeah. Rest your voice. So it's very small, very close-knit. And they had more creative freedom. They were kind of still exploring. Tim was creating kind of the style guide for the pop figures. And those first years were great, but Funko obviously became bigger and they went public and things changed and there wasn't as much creative freedom as
it was just wanted. more rigidity and like more people to answer to. And so it kind of lost that, like, I don't know, like, the early days were just, like, it was very, like, mentorship. Like, I was trying to soak in as much knowledge from these amazing artists as I could. Like, every day I would go in and be, like, I would learn something new because all of these artists already had a working, like, history of, like, silk screening from, t-shirts or, like, product design for like promotional products and stuff like that. Like, I was just soaking all of that information in because I'd never been around other creatives like that.
As I was saying, it moved from that creative space to almost like a factory setting.
it was very like, you need to do one thing and do it very, very fast because
you had like quotas. You had to get a certain number of character turns and concepts done by the end of the week.
Yeah, it became very like rigid and there wasn't as much like freedom to even just like concept and like think of new ideas. Like,
yeah. And so I could see Tim slowly
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters, specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsoring Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
Getting worn down by that new system that they're using. And so that's when I really started pushing him. You need to leave. You need to get your creativity back, your joy back. And he was very resistant because he felt, you felt you owed Funko.
I grew so much at Funko, at least even like in the early days, that like, I felt like I owed it to them to like,
stick with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it wasn't a good environment for you anymore.
Right.
And so when COVID came around and things really started changing, that's when they started laying people off. And we really saw the direction the company was going, that they were laying off all the artists. And so,
yeah, everything was streamlined as much as possible.
Yeah.
Outsourced as much as possible. Mm-hmm.
And that's when we're like, no, it's time to jump ship. This isn't going the way we hope it to. We always kind of held out a tiny, like,
yeah, like maybe after like a certain point, like they would realize and like
turn the ship around.
No,
it kept getting worse. And so that, 2020 is when Tim officially left. And it took a good year and a half to
probably more than that.
Yeah.
Like 2 years.
Like 2 years for Tim to regain his creative joy.
Yeah.
It crushed me like when I left, because like some of these artists became like my family. Like I learned so much from them that it's like, oh, what do I do now? Like,
yeah. Yeah. And that's when I really started pushing you. Like, why would you work for another company that could turn out to be another Funko and like crush you all over again when you are talented enough? You can do this on your own. Like, you know what to do now. You have all of this experience.
Yeah. And I just had no self-confidence anymore. I had to like build that back up.
Yeah.
How long? So over the 2 years, what was the initial thing that kind of sparked both of you? That's like, he's gaining back his freedom and his like confidence and creative spark, and you're like, awesome, we're both gonna just go for this.
Yeah. Was there like a moment where we're like, okay, let's do this?
I don't know if there was.
I think it was when you finally started like just designing again. You started making new characters. You made Stubby.
Yeah.
And I was like, Tim, these are good. These could be a line, and like, I'll help you do this. Like, I will teach myself everything I need to know to make this a business.
I think that was the push that I needed, was like someone else to tell me like, it's okay. Like, if you don't know everything, mm-hmm. we'll figure it out together. Like, I think that's what it took.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it was one of those balancing moments where it's like, I support you. I see the talent, and I will fill in the skill set that you don't have and you would need to make this a reality. And so, yeah, I just dove in and started researching how to make it a business, yeah. how to like,
and sell I was things. Also like deep diving into learning. Like, I didn't know how to 3D model at the time. So like,
yeah, coming out of Funko, he didn't know how to 3D model yet.
Like, so I had dabbled in ZBrush a little bit and had quit it like multiple times because it was frustrating.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, this is it. Like, I'm going to learn it. Like,
yeah. Yeah. You found videos that worked for you. You just sat down, and we really treated that like a job, because he wasn't really working at the time. He had some odd jobs in those 2 years.
So many odd jobs.
I made
logos for Amazon. When everyone was like freaking out and making like their own like
loaves of bread and stuff,
I went and worked for a bakery for a bit and learned how to make croissants and like designer cakes and stuff. And I was like,
nice.
This is kind of fun.
Yeah, he became a baker for like 6 months. And then, yeah, but in the meantime, he was treating 3D modeling like a job. I was like, you set your own hours, but you got to work your 8 hours. 5 days a week.
Yep. I would watch
3D modeling.
I would watch like 3 hours of tutorial videos, and then I would 3 hours of practicing, and like,
yeah,
that's what it took. Like,
mm-hmm.
And then, yeah. I mean, because Lostling seems to have gotten bigger very quickly, because that wasn't mm-hmm. that long ago. So
yeah,
that's a crazy work week to tutorial and edit or like do all that. And it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it worked. Tim found his joy in modeling and just creating these characters. And I realized I enjoyed the business aspect of it, which was new for me.
Mm-hmm.
And helping him like tweak these characters, concepting, and then eventually once he started printing them, painting. I was doing all of the painting for our figures in the beginning. Tim's definitely gotten better at that.
I was so bad at painting. Like, I've never been like super good at painting, but like, yeah, night and day difference between what I can do and what she can do.
Yeah. And there would not be Lostlings if it had just been Tim starting out with his painting skills.
I am not a painter.
Did that for you, because you went sciences and wanted to kind of put art behind, now painting these like little things that are being created by, especially by someone that you absolutely love. So who, like, did that just ignite everything back all over again?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Being able to help him, my sketches are terrible, but I would draw up a character.
There's such charm in your sketches. Like,
They look like a preschooler drew them. But anyway, yeah, I would sketch up these characters. He would be like, oh, I see it. I get it. He would model them. We would tweak them together. And then you would get this physical form that I was able to paint and really put life into. And once I started seeing what we were making, I was like, oh my gosh, this is everything. I love this. Like,
there's something really special about like concepting something and then having it be a physical reality in front of you. Like, there's something magical in that.
There really is. Yeah. Cause like I said, I had been looking over his shoulder the whole time he was at Funko and like offering tips and stuff there, but yeah, actually being able to paint the figure at the end and be like, wow, I had a part in this. Mm-hmm. It's really that tipping point. I'm like,
so awesome. At this like cusp of creativity, how did we come up with the name The Lostlings and then start creating this? Because it's very much a style and both of your style. How did we get to that point?
Yeah. So The Lostlings is kind of multiple things all thrown together. We started with the base of Lost, and that was a... So back in high school, I worked at a Girl Scout camp, and we all had to have these like camp names as a counselor, so that the little girls would remember our name, but also as like a level of security or something. I don't know exactly what it was, but I went by Lost because I thought it was funny that I could introduce myself as, hi, I'm Lost. And all the little girls would giggle, and it was like a good icebreaker. And so I had been going by Lost for a long time. And then Lost is the name as like a screen name on AIM, dating myself again. And now in Discord, and it's always been my screen name. So we took that, and then Lings was kind of like, we were playing around with a lot of different variations of Lost, or like Tim's toys, and like, there's a lot of workshopping.
Yeah, we started off with like Tim's toys, or like Tiny Tim toys, like
stuff we like that. Cutesy.
But like, it wasn't feeling right because I didn't want it to be solely me, because it was always going to be more than just me making toys. So
it was trying to find something cutesy but integrated both of us. And so I think you came up with the Ling bit, and we just kind of tagged them both together.
Yeah,
and we're like, that works. It's Lost Lings.
And we were making little characters that needed a home, and so being lost and being a Ling kind of made sense. And so
it just kind of fell into place. And then as far as the characters themselves, it was it's a mix of both of our styles. Tim is very much into the cutesy, rounded, big-eyed,
always been like super cutesy, cartoony, even as a kid. Like, my dad would draw something like a little mouse or something, and I would redraw it as a cuter mouse. Like, I don't know why, I just always did that.
Level up the cute.
It was just my preferred like style, I guess.
And then I am kind of the opposite. I like characters with like gangly limbs and kind of off.
Yeah, you like the eerie things.
I like eerie things. Yeah. But I integrated my style with the more muted color palette that we have. Because with Tim's super cutesy stuff, you would expect it to be like flamboyant and bright.
Like bubblegum and like
But that's not my style. And so I'm like, what if we have these super cutesy characters, but they're like more muted and like more moody. Natural color. Moody.
Yeah.
Almost. So that's kind of how we came to the style of the Lostlings.
It pops out. I'm like, in scrolling, one of the ones that I saw was like a whale shark that was made, and which is this like terrifyingly enormous animal, but somehow is like rounded off to be this like cute little thing that's going on my shelf. And I think what's really interesting about your styles is that those eyes that they resemble like the love that you had when you were at Funko, those eyes, or the love of Beanie Babies when you were younger. Mm-hmm. They've got those eyes that pop, that they're black, but they have so much depth to them. And I don't understand it.
Yeah. It's those beady black eyes. They just draw you in.
Very shiny eyes to be that sparkle of like,
yeah, from the very beginning, we're like, we want those, the sparkly eyes. And to differentiate them from other things with the beady black eyes, we build more expression around them. So mm-hmm. you get the expression from the character, despite the eyes just being black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they work. They work so well. Yeah. So as you're doing this first couple months, you're doing so much probably with like sculpting and all that stuff, and you're doing the business side of it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what are the first couple months like? When did you start to think like, oh, we're going to do shows and we're going to do all of this stuff?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh, man.
Those first days were very hectic.
Yeah. Gosh, it feels like a million years ago and it was only two. it was very hectic because we're like still trying to find our footing, figure out where we fit in the toy world. And we didn't expect much initially. We figured the first, actually like 5 years we had planned, we figured the first like 5 years would just kind of be our growing and figuring out everything stage. Clearly that didn't happen. We like blew up way faster than anticipated. But we were doing more like local craft shows in Seattle and kind of gauging the response we got while also feeling out the toy scene through like Instagram and stuff online. Mm-hmm. And we happened to fall into a community that already existed in the toy world is Boozin' Buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And their audience, and they immediately accepted our art and were super supportive. And Tim did some customized pieces for them, and that really sent us to the next level. Like,
people were seeing our stuff and they understood it and they got it like immediately.
Yeah. It was like we're living in two different worlds. We had the craft shows where we have to explain to people what this is and that it's all handcrafted and like it's a collectible, not something that you would give your child.
Yeah.
And then online we have these people that are like, wow, the artistry is amazing and we love it and we want to add it to our collection. And we're like, whoa. very jarring.
It's very different because like, yeah, everything like in person was like we had to explain it to people. Like we didn't have very many characters left or like made yet. So mm-hmm.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
Telling like what our plans were and then people just weren't getting it.
Yeah, a lot of people, they wanted to know like where we're going with this. What's the point? And they always assumed that we were going to make like a game or a like a storybook or something with it instead of the characters, which who knows, maybe we do that in the future. Maybe. Like Horrible Adorables did it.
Yeah.
But that wasn't like our intent. We were just making collectible art toys.
Yeah. And we were focusing on the characters, giving them a backstory and trying to make cutesy, creepy characters. Like the goal.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess to answer your question, a lot of that initial was just like finding our footing, figuring out how to interact with our different audiences and finding where we fit in each. Because also we're not exactly like designer toy artists where they'll make only a handful of figures and they're all usually different. We, for every one of our characters, we make 50 of them. So mm-hmm. it's like a limited run it's of like, two different characters.
We're every kind month. Of in between.
Yeah.
Like having a studio that makes small production runs of things and like an independent artist that makes like 10 of something and that's it. Like,
yeah. Yeah. We're in between in the numbers, but also like we have way more, we have way bigger of a number of items than you would typically see from someone that's doing everything by hand in-house. Right. There's like no manufacturing involved. Like we're hand painting all of these. So we're still kind of riding that line and figuring it out.
Yeah.
But that was a big hurdle we had in the beginning, explaining to both audiences what we're trying to do here.
Right.
Yeah.
Because those audiences are so different. And it's sometimes in like toy customization or any of that, it kind of gets lumped into like arts and crafts a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really tough to say like, I really like arts and crafts, but we're not you. We're definitely not you. And so to find your footing, especially very early on, is so wild. And so like as you're going and you're creating all these things, where do you find the acceptance? So we have Booze and Buddies. Do you like, are you kind of going further into that? Like, where do you settle in the toy community as a whole? That's a hard question because there's so many avenues that it exists in.
Yeah. That is hard. I think still at this point, we're figuring it out. I don't think we've really settled into any one of the typical paths for a designer toy artist. I think we're kind of blazing our own path at this point.
Awesome. I think there's a number of people that are doing kind of what we do. And we're all kind of learning as we go.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in between the toy makers that do manufactured large quantities and the like hand sculpted limited number. So yeah, there are other toy makers like us, but there's not really a path for us. And so we're figuring that out as we go.
What's admirable, I do runs for like DKE at Designer Con and I get pissed doing 20 and you were both doing 50 and like that's and now you're doing two a month. Mm-hmm. So 100 figures that you're just no.
I know we're kind of crazy and it's probably not sustainable because that is a lot. 100 pieces per month on top of like anything we're making for shows. It's a lot for anybody. And thankfully Tim is full time. He can just focus on this, but yeah, I still have a full time job and have to balance my life. And we still have to figure out time for,
I think it helps ourselves. That like, because there's so many figures, like you have to take breaks of like sanding the figure. It could be like a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll give you a break to like, think about like maybe your next character or like,
that's true.
You kind of like have to take space when you can to like
we've kind of built our lives around the Lostlings at this point, because like I'll come home from work and we'll take a pause, we'll do dinner, there's no like toy conversation at dinner, that's one of our set like us times. And then we'll put on like a show on Netflix or something and he'll start sanding and I'll start painting, and during that time of like watching a show together but also working, we can also kind of like run ideas back and forth and flush out what we're doing for the next couple months. And yeah, that's just kind of our routine. So
that's such a good routine. I think, especially setting the boundary of like dinners, no toy talk.
Yeah.
Like that, because it consumes every part from like collecting or like bringing on artists or doing whatever. Mm-hmm. It just consumes every part of who we are in the toy community.
Yeah. Yeah. We've definitely learned that we need to have boundaries and personal time. Like we're still working on it, but Tim is supposed to set,
we're getting better at it.
Yeah Tim's supposed to set one day a week where he doesn't do toys. He can do stuff around the house, catch up on normal life stuff, and not have Lostlings just consume everything.
Yeah, I think one of the good things about loving what you do and one of the terrible things about loving what you do is like you can work 100% of the time and like there's always going to be something to do. So like you have to put those boundaries in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or you will burn yourself out.
Right.
Yeah. So with all of this, what's next for Lostlings?
Oh gosh. A lot. We have a lot coming up. And we have a lot of hopes for the future. Like I said, we can't always be doing everything ourselves by hand. And so we're slowly learning how to rely on other people to do some of the work for us. We just recently, I think I'm allowed to say this now because Corey is showing it off. Yeah, it's been shown. But we're working with Strange Cat Toys, Corey,
awesome.
To make a manufactured piece.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be coming very, very soon. We're very excited for that. That was a big, big area of learning for us because while Tim has worked with big manufacturing before, it was like not his baby, like really.
Right, yeah.
And so this is like, yeah, we're doing the final checks and comments and making sure that it lives up to our standards because we're both perfectionists. We have very high standards.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that'll be coming.
Will it be in the style of like a blind box or in the style of a manufactured and painted piece?
A full piece. Yeah, we have one right here.
Show and tell.
Yeah, show them the whole thing.
So it's actually a 4-inch figure of Stubby.
Oh, great.
Yeah, Stubby was our first character fully made. However, actually, you have the original Stubby there too.
It took us like, what was it, a year, year and a half?
Yeah, we didn't actually release him until a year into the Lostlings.
Oh, he's perfect.
So this is Fairy Dust Stubby that will be produced by Strange Cat Toys.
Yeah, moving around so you can see the sparkle.
It's beautiful.
Absolutely perfect. Holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're very proud of him. He will be coming out soon. And then...
Oh, yeah, the original.
The original Stubby that we printed. He still has the fused eyes. And like, it's just, if you look at him close, he's got a lot of issues, but... He's become this beautiful thing.
Everything you do, you learn and get better. So
it's true. It's true. Anyway, yeah, we have that coming. We're starting to do more gallery shows and submitting more pieces to galleries, which is really exciting because that also broadens our audience. We'll have a solo show later this year.
Awesome.
So we're very excited for that. It'll be our first like true solo show. I don't know. When we first started, we initially had like plans and timelines, but since all of that kind of got thrown out the window when we were just so readily accepted and we started like the business actually took off, we're kind of just rolling with the punches at this point.
Yeah. I thought it would take like 3 years for people to even understand like what we're doing. So
yeah, no, and here we are 2 years in and the business is self-sufficient and we're still able to do what we want to do, what we love.
People love it. We're enjoying the process. Like it feels good.
It feels good.
It seems like people latched on so quick because it makes toys so approachable. When a toy looks cutesy and it like it feels it different, like it just has, you widen this audience that we're always trying to widen, and so it's awesome to see it happen. Where's the solo show? Are you allowed to say where that's going to be at?
I think so. Yeah, it hasn't technically been announced, but it's at the Ghost Fox Toys Gallery.
Awesome.
So yeah, we'll be one of their first artists to do a solo show there.
That's so incredible. Holy moly.
Yeah, just doing like some of the art shows that we were fortunate enough to do like early on. We met so many amazing people and friends, and that's been really helpful.
Yeah. I know in general, the art community has like a rap of being hard to get into, but the people we've met have been so accepting and so welcoming, and we've shared tips with them, they've shared tips with us. It's just been
I feel like there's two paths. There's the I struggled very hard to get where I am, so I'm not going to tell you how to do anything.
Yeah, you have to figure it out yourself.
The newer path of like, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. Let's learn together and do this. Like,
yeah. And we're very much proponents for the second path, the let's do this together. And because we were so like so quickly welcomed, we feel that we owe it to the art community and the newer artists to give back and share. Like, we're an open book. We'll share all of our methods to do everything. We even once a week on Thursdays, Tim streams on Twitch, so you can see him modeling. He will give you
there's no secret. Everything's just a tool. You got to learn how to use it. Like,
yeah,
I'm still learning. Like, if you know something that I don't, like, I love to hear that. Like,
it
only makes us better. So
yeah, exactly. We are all about, like, if one ship rises, we all rise. Like,
yeah,
let's just make this happen together.
That's awesome. We have two parts left of the podcast. You get to plug all the stuff that where people can get your stuff, where they can find you, if you want to do collaborations, all that. And then we have something called the nitty gritty we do with each artist. That's a specific question. And it's 10 to 20 minutes that goes on the Patreon. And it's just, I already have my question for you both ready to go. So let's close this out and please plug away how they can get in touch with you, get a hold of you, all those things.
Yeah. I think the easiest way to get a hold of us is either through Instagram, we're the.lostlings, or through just direct email. We reply to all of our emails, and that's hello@thelostlings.com. We're always open to collaborations or ideas. We have a running list of characters that people have recommended, so nice. We'll take all of the feedback.
So Thursdays at noon.
Yeah, Thursdays at noon. Tim streams on Twitch. That's also The Lostlings. And I think those are the... We are on Facebook, but I don't really interact. It
doesn't really
over
work
there.
That well, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little harder to engage over there. So yeah, Instagram, email, Twitch. Those are the places to see us, get a hold of us, anything.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming on Toys on Tap.
Yeah, thanks for having us.